Working to become less distorted is a distortion itself, and the seeker who attempts to guide itself in the ways of becoming the creator is, instead, most likely developing patterns of thinking that are in and of themselves an additional distortion. So there is the addition of distortion rather than the subterranean of distortion. 52 Instead of immediately trying to become less distorted, it seems more helpful to focus first on forgiving the distorted self and accepting it, just as it is. When the person facing this situation can realize the degree of fear that is distorting the challenge at hand, then it is that that entity becomes more and more skillful at looking straight at the fear involved and taking that fear within the heart and forgiving the self for being fearful. This work upon the self, over a period of time, begins to build up for 253, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation. The self, a concept of the self as being flexible, able to learn new ways, unafraid to speak regardless of the consequences. 53 I feel it is important to work at removing fear little by little, not tearing away whole systems of fear so quickly that we are aquiver with it, but moving towards fearlessness one small step at a time. Removing fear allows us the freedom we need to consolidate what we have learned and keep moving onward to new vistas, new learning, new growth. This childlike nature is balanced and focused by the maturing sensibility of a seeker. This is the strength of experience, catalyst which has been processed and placed carefully within the personality as a secure building block is placed within any builded structure. However, this maturing and adult-like attitude can also be an inhibitor to further change, in that it wishes to maintain that which it has and that which it is. For it is difficult enough to accept one's self as one sees the self, and to be asked to accept that which is perhaps more unknown within the self is an added challenge, which again requires the attitude of the child, looking at all about it without fear and with complete acceptance. 54 In this regard, I want to iterate something I have said before, I am not writing this book completely from experience, or at least not fully successful experience. Take this sub of coming into a full and joyful acceptance of the present moment and situation. Am I fully successful at this? Of course not. And how ironic it is, as I work on this particular sayian, to note that I spent the first part of this day, as I answered mail from those who write to L.L. Research, eagerly looking forward to that time in the afternoon when I should be free to work on this A Wanderer's Handbook Pro. Now that I have gotten to it, I am spending part of the 15 minutes I've carved out of the day bemoaning how little time I have left before I must quit the exhilarating task. We all have so much to do. I enjoy every letter and errand, but sometimes chafe under the busyness. I cannot come into full appreciation of this single present moment, except rarely, in an utter way. The bare memory of moments of full presence, however, draws me on irresistibly. And of course I, as do we all, have time to price. My lessons repeat for me most conveniently, and I am able to keep rehearsing those things to which I have come to be sensitive as my lessons. Do not ever be discouraged from doing Indigo Ray work because you are not, in your own eyes, successful or worthy. Just keep pricing. CB encourages us to think of it as a maze, which we can keep retracing until we solve it. It isn't the mysteries in life that are profound. It's living it and finding your way through it as an atom in its structural becoming. 55, 254, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation. The fruits of acceptance include love and forgiveness, so rouse the self from its days with a shout of joy and stand in glad acceptance that you shall do all for love. And in that giving you may perhaps have one outcome or the other. But whether the little life of flesh is ended or is preserved, then you shall be with the Creator. Take these opportunities to polarize, to experience unconditional love, to experience a deep forgiveness, of all concerned, and most of all of yourself, for being dazed by the illusion once again. 56 We may be up the lazy river, in the words of Hoagy Carmichael's song, but we do have a pole, or at least some small say in just how we take our course by the old mill run. Another fruit of acceptance is a deepened quality of patience, A limitation is wisely accepted as the basis of evaluation of further Orion. When one cannot walk, one finds oneself an appropriate seat. When one cannot speak, one remains silent. When one cannot understand, one embraces mystery. When one cannot move, one embraces the concept of moving motionlessness. 57. We are all vulnerable to the seduction of the work ethic when it comes to doing spiritual work. What use are our gifts if they are not shared with love, as Saint Paul said so long ago? Without love, we are a clanging gong, a big, empty noise. Being comes first. It is such a subtle play, being and doing, balancing acceptance with the use of the steering mechanism and finding ways to cooperate with our destiny. When we use words like acceptance, we move into words that share many of the same textures and qualities, like love, praise and thanksgiving. This process of accepting that which is, whether it be easy or difficult, is a process of, in one sense, becoming able to appreciate each facet of the Creator that is revealed to you and to build upon this appreciation so that it becomes more natural to give praise and thanksgiving for all one's experiences. For, within the attitude of praise and thanksgiving, one smooths the journey, shall we say. 58. The larger viewpoint teaches acceptance. How Perspive helps. We work both with acceptance and desire, so intimately it is impossible to see them, or any of these concerns we have been talking about, as separate paths, for they interweave and play through our experience, and we pick up more ability to play in return with these skills and attitudes towards the present moment and all it holds. When we can find easy acceptance of what is happening, what a wonderful estate to dwell within. When we find our 255, chapter 8, the healing of the incarnation selves caught with the unacceptable and the thorns of our own desires, we can still meet the moment with praise and thanksgiving. This attitude of gratitude is like doing as if we are in love or as if we have faith. It offers a hotbed for the truth to grow up in. If we can find ways to appreciate the beauties and blessings of the present moment, we are entering into a level of seeking that, to me, makes sense and helps a lot with my basic and rather blandly devotional mysticism. Not that the fire of my worship is bland, but that passivity itself seems intrinsically inane. When people come up to me at parties, they generally are asking things about me, and what have I to report? Ecstasy lifting me as I dance in the living room with my husband after a day of work. Joy flooding me in so many moments this day. The play of the dead petals all curled up in brown dignity on the last of the daffodils I was deadheading. The new coleus just welcomed to the garden under the sycamore tree this afternoon while Jim and I talked with an old friend who dropped by for Sabbath blessings. Bliss does not travel to party conversation well. Many seekers share this basic problem. The concerns that take up our main interest aren't commonly shared. How many people wish to speak of coming fully into the present moment, for instance, in a world that is often unaccepting of us, to find acceptance within ourselves, for ourselves and each other and what is a true challenge. However, it is an effort I have found well worth the trouble. Using the light touch, all these ways of working with indigo ray can tend to make us sober citizens. We can easily become overly serious and earnest in our spiritual seeking, an attitude as much out of balance as a cavalier and scornful attitude towards serious study would be. The truth of experience seems to be that oftentimes pain is a catalyst for the learning of the light touch. Going for the light touch is calling on our deeper nature. Realize, each of you, that stress must not get in the way of the light touch. The merry joke, the smile, the grin, the laughter, the good times. That is your true nature. You are all children of the Creator, and the Creator is love and joy, merriment and peace. 59. It is not that we know it all and therefore can relax and laugh. We are choosing to be merry in the face of continuing unknowing. No word and no concept of which we now know can encompass the great mystery of the infinite Creator. In the face of such a complete, 256, chapter 8, the healing of the incarnation unknowing, it is well to have a sense of humor, to feel free to be merry in one's search, for long faces are not good environments for the rapid growth of spirit. and as each within your often painful illusion must wear the long face from time to time, we hope to encourage in one's spiritual seeking that most blessed quality of joy. 60. The very energy of laughter and the light touches green and blue chakra level energy and is sacred. If you have difficulty feeling that laughter is holy, think back to the last time in which you laughed and laughed. Was there not a full feeling of receiving the expression of love, forgiveness and healing within the heart of that laughter? Laughter is the fire's communication with the earth as mercy is the rain's communication with the earth. Laughter first burns away pain, then it builds golden castles and offers to the joyous recipient the universe. 61. Not unexpectedly, since laughter is blue-ray energy, there is tremendous truth in laughter, and laughter and the light touch improve communication. There is great truth in laughter. One who takes himself seriously and goes solemnly about the business of telling the truth will find himself with his leaves turned away from the sun, unfed by light and love. Take a light touch, each of you with yourselves. Love and care passionately, and burn for your highest ideals, but not for your own performances and behaviors. At these you may laugh, for to be human and to be foolish is to say one thing twice. You will be foolish. Enjoy the folly that allows you to care so much, too much, that you risk everything and leap into mid-air knowing nothing because of your love of a mystery that you know only by faith and hope. 62. Along with most wanderers and outsiders, I have an irresistible and unavoidable sense of humor. I love to laugh. I see a cartoon in every scene that unfolds before my eyes, no matter how fraught with difficulty. Mary too. A woman who has certainly had enough tough catalyst in her life for three or four people, agrees, do wanderers have a warped, outrageous sense of humor? I know I do. That's one of the things that keep me going. 63. Those of you who heartily concur, that which your peoples call the sense of humor is, indeed, most helpful to any entity, no matter the position upon the path or the 257, chapter 8. The healing of the incarnation placement within the life pattern. We see that which you call the sense of humor as being a sense of proportion where an entity is able to gain enough experience within the life that one may see a broader view. One stands upon a somewhat more elevated position, building experience upon experience, until that which you call wisdom is begun. 64. In terms of working with the self, we are told to deal with ourselves very gently. As each seeks to be of service, each need not treat himself harshly if at times he comes short of his expectations of how he should help others, or if others fail to respond to his attempts at service as he would have expected them to. The attempt is often worth more if it is tried without the expected results occurring, for in these times he is afforded the opportunity to reflect rear ions, attempts, and can learn to deal with himself softly. 65. How do we come at a sense of humor when things seem bleak? A key here is the concept of balance. The light touches a balance for seriousness. Melissa, for instance, has great need of this balance, for her experience has discouraged her hope that she can rise above emptiness and folly. The far that Melissa is in business is undoubtedly a far, or she repines, regarding what you said about faith and seeing the silliness and emptiness of things, I'm afraid that very emptiness is what has made it so difficult for me to have any levity whatsoever. 66. The vision of the human comedy, with its tragic aspects and its utterly funny ones too, is most helpful, if you gaze at the universe, not with a jaundiced eye, but with the eye of a merry child, you may see the comedy amidst the tragedy that is life as you experience it. The light touch, the sense of humor, is extremely helpful in lightening stress. To laugh is to be within the kingdom of heaven. To be in close love and harmony with another is to experience the bliss of that heavenly kingdom. 67. The healing of the incarnation takes time and patience. We work with our desires, and with the letting go of desires, accepting the challenge of entering fully into the present moment, and accepting the certainty of our continual failures to do this consistently. How precious a sense of humor, the light touch and laughter are as we wend our way through the ways of self and circumstance. 258, Chapter 8, The Healing of the Incarnation, 1-3, July 16, 1994. Twas sex and relationships. Sexuality is something with which none of us escapes dealing. More than any other activity which is inculturated as a central theme of societies, it is irresistible. Even if we spend our lives celibate and in retreat, our bodies themselves will function sexually in ways we cannot control, giving us a sex life even if it is only in dreams and fantasy, and ethical considerations of every hue if we find ourselves a true to and embarking upon intimate relationships. I cannot speak first-hand for men, but as a woman, I was quite unawakened until kissed by the man I considered my prince, at the age of 17. When I was 15, wondering what all the buzz was about, I accepted a date with the handsomest man I knew, with the intention of trying a kiss to see if I liked lust. I gave it a very fair try and was forced to conclude that there was nothing in lust for me except nausea. I knew then that it was folly for me to be concerned about dating until I met someone I could conceive of loving. I have come to understand that women now often start their sexual lives much earlier and more casually than I did at 19, which was my age when I first made love, and with the fiancé I thought I would marry quite soon. However, from my own experience I would say that it is still quite possible for a woman to remain celibate and contented in her virginity until marriage, if she does not have deeply erotic physical contact with her dates. Once awakened, a woman's sexual passion is very strong as a man's. Those wishing to maintain celibacy until marriage, men and women both, are encouraged not to awaken those passions within, but to keep dating very light and innocent. There is a wonderful energy to giving one's body to one's mate for whom one has faithfully waited. If it is still within your range of choices, I recommend this avenue of awakening the sexuality. If we make love with one mate, that mate is the whole world of sex. It is nearly always a positive experience, and a bond is created that is very dear. With the advent of a second lovemaking partner, one is introduced to the world of comparisons. This is not always a good thing for one's eventual state of contentment within an abiding relationship. I happen to be married to the most studly man I ever met, so I am a happy woman today. But I do know why. More apropos, when I made love with my first love, I thought he, 261, chapter 9, sex and relationships ruled the world. A second partner quickly revealed that some animals are more equal than others, to use an Animal Farm phrase. For men, there is a different physiology and a different enculturation, which makes the choice of celibacy, both as a young teenager and later in life, more of a challenge. Unlike women, whose sexual trigger points are hidden away and not immediately of her or in her everyday consciousness, a man's phallus dangles overtly and restlessly, bouncing with every step he takes, rubbing against his clothing and groin, inescapably there. A young boy's relationship with his penis is intimate, little toddlers and kids not yet trained out of it hang on to their sex at inappropriate moments, not guessing that so pleasant a thing could be wrong. I have sympathy for men. I do not think their sexuality is stronger, it is just out there and much more easily brought to mind. This does not excuse a man's choice of indiscriminate sex from a spiritual or ethical standpoint, but it is meant to indicate an understanding of the situation. Men do not stray a great deal more than women in terms of having affairs. But it is often the case that a man will be less discriminating in his choice of partners, for sex is more often on his mind and good choices are usually thin on the ground. Our culture is distinctly unhelpful in this regard. Cleavage or beefcake and a pretty smile are callously and abusively used to sell produce in our advertising, and we grow up taking in and committing to unhealthy memory these sexual non-suches, which we quite often look nothing like. Pretty women and handsome men are often courted for their attractiveness alone, and I have met quite a few men who do not like that kind of sexist treatment any more than most women do. Nevertheless, there it is. Fat or thin, hip or unstylish in our looks, we are all, when in the market for a sexual partner, in a huge display of sorts, with people looking at each other and musing on whether there is chemistry there. We might find the process wonderfully exciting, or ghastly and to be avoided at all costs, or any point in between those two extremes, but we will undoubtedly be there at some point. I embrace my sexuality and my passion. It has brought me together with people that have changed my life and transformed it in ways beyond my imagination. It brings us to incredibly complex learnings, service and choices, but is, itself, simple indeed, as simple as animal magnetism. Sexual attraction brings us together. Let us examine passion. As we have said, it is the enclosure of two very powerful forces, purified emotion and that free will within the entity which chooses to stand behind that purified emotion. The most basic passion and perhaps the one most clear in the mind of each here, is, 262, Chapter 9, Sex and Relationships. Sexual, physical passion. Because the body cannot speak, it is most often true within your illusion that true passion is felt in this way rather than in an intellectual or spiritual manner. This is as it should be, for it is the cornerstone of your carefully contrived illusion that physical passion shall bring people together. 1. The experience of sexual ecstasy is often our first and sometimes our only experience of the Creator. We are not saying that each must have the sex life, we are saying that each must feel good about having a sex life, whether one is or is not in a relationship at the time. One must feel not only tolerant but good when one thinks of one's passion and sexuality, for the passion that one feels at orgasm is one's first experience of the steady state of the Creator. It is brief and fleeting, but it is an indication given as a gift and also as a pufflyprekel means of evolving the species by the one infinite Creator. 2. Its expression wells up from the depths of our archetypal and logic roots of mind, yet, both in and out of the garden of Eden, there comes the second archetype, the helper. Each entity has within it the lonely warrior and the helper, the fount of all wisdom and solace. Your logos has created a strongly biased sexual differentiation so that although each male and each female experiences both needs, yet still to the male is given the striving for the freedom by nature, to the female, the centered feeling of untold riches of happiness, solace and peace. Neither males nor females experience enough of freedom without an emotional bias, and neither males nor females experience most purely the joy of being of total service. Yet by the sexual choice of a chemical body at the beginning of incarnation, each of you has chosen to experience the male archetype or the female archetype as regards that which is demanded by the culture. It is to be noted that only in highly cerebral cultures where education has been carried far does the idea of interchangeable roles surface, for it is not an idea which fits naturally with the genetic disposition of the third density body which has been issued to each of you. 3. It is easy to see why the change in sexual roles can be disturbing. Rules of polarity which our culture has adopted for centuries are being changed.